Pod Clubhouse and Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home with Beth Kushnick are pleased to announce our Frontline Workers Hero Appreciation Contest.
Running from now until May 19th, the rules for the contest are simple. We want you to nominate the frontline worker hero in your life and tell us why. That's it. That's all you have to do.
The frontline worker chosen will win a design consultation with interior designer to the stars and set decorator, Beth Kushnick.
As well as a gift certificate sponsored by Raymourn Flanagan to help put your design ideas into action. To nominate your frontline worker hero, just head to podclubhouse.com and fill out the official contest form. See the post at Pod Clubhouse for all of the official rules and contest information. No purchase or payment is necessary to enter.
Void where prohibited by law.
Pod Clubhouse.
This is Paul from Pod Clubhouse, and I'm here with Kat from Shuffle Online.
Hey, how are y'all?
Wonderful. Glad to be on the podcast with you again.
Happy to be back.
And our Snowpiercer honorable mention Taylee person. Inez, how are you today?
Hi, doing great. Happy to be back.
I'm glad we could get the team back together. I'm not for sure what all of our various verdicts are going to be on this particular show, but we've assembled, we've united, one might say, to talk about Netflix's newest superhero series. It's called Jupiter's Legacy. Was this a work that any of you had heard of before I asked if you wanted to cover it?
No, I hadn't heard about it because, of course, there's so many Netflix shows and things, and I guess it kind of fell through. But when you told me about it, you're like, you should watch the trailer. It's probably right up your alley. And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, yeah, that looks interesting. And I like this new superhero genre that's emerging, like in the spirit of The Boys, which we covered from Amazon Prime, and more of like not your like Marvel or DCU superheroes. Mm-hmm. So I was intrigued, and I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. So I hadn't heard anything prior to you telling me, so thank you.
Okay. What about you, Ines?
First, I think a missed opportunity, Paul, to refer to us as a union, if you will.
I was heading that direction.
thank you. Because now that I feel like I'm part of a union, I will go gladly participate. But no, I actually had not heard about this body of work before. But it was really great timing when you reach out to me, because my husband and I have just been on this kick of just continuing watching like the Marvel superhero stories. Like, I just love all of that kind of vibe. And so I was really excited to give this a shot.
Well, I'm glad. I knew that about you both, that this genre was something you were actively interested in and hadn't necessarily run into superhero fatigue just yet, but might have been looking for another take on the tried and true genre. So as I'm sure both of you are aware, for a brief period, Netflix had the license to Marvel's best TV shows.
Yes.
Right. Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage.
Oh, yes. I love them.
And they also had Iron Fist.
Yeah. We won't mention that one.
So then Disney Plus comes online and says, we're going to pull all that shit down. Netflix then says, coincidentally, we're canceling all that stuff. So that left them without a premier superhero license. You know, they had the Umbrella Academy somewhere in there, but that's not quite as mainstream as what they found with a comic book writer named Mark Miller. Are you guys hip to Mark Miller?
No.
Yeah, he sounds familiar. Oh, Kick-Ass and Kingsman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. He is a Scottish writer who has written for Superman. He's written for the X-Men. He has written for Wolverine. His storylines for those properties have included things like the Civil War story that was adapted into the movie, roughly, kind of.
In Captain America?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then his Wolverine story was what was called the Old Man Logan storyline, which was roughly adapted to Logan, the third Wolverine solo movie.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Yeah, I loved it.
So when he broke out on his own, he created what he called the Millar world. And it might be called Millar. It's like M-I-L-L-A-R. So I don't want to say it not right, but I've never heard anyone say it in person. So we're just going to go with Millar. So in that, he created Wanted, which was a movie with Angelina Jolie.
I love that one.
right. And Kick-Ass. And like you said, The Kingsman. And so this guy has like a... His pen works magic. People like his stuff. And so Jupiter's Legacy and its surrounding series are part of the Millar world, which Netflix bought like lock, stock, and barrel in terms of like the ability to create shows based on that. I don't know what else is coming, but this has been cooking since, I think it says 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of background of this show.
Oh, yeah. It says that in 2018, that's when they announced that they did the 8-episode first season. So that's 3 years ago.
Crazy, wow. Right?
Yeah. And then it looks like there was a little bit of drama because there was like a showrunner that left and then someone else took over. So that's interesting because I have some thoughts on how I feel about this series. So I wonder if that is something to play in there.
Okay. That's fair because there are things to discuss on things that a showrunner would impact, that's for sure. So that's basically where the show comes from. The Inez, why don't you give us a short summary of what this show is about?
So I thought this was a really interesting story. It's on a high level without giving anything away. It sounded like, I experienced an origin story of the new set of heroes, and that was super exciting. Just kind of imagining how powers come into fruition of exactly how I felt, like kind of like when I read comics as a kid. I always really loved being able to see it translated in a cinematic way. And I thought that this show did really great kind of doing that. So just getting to see this whole new set, story subset was super cool. I really enjoyed the way that they tell it, and I'm sure that we'll get into that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mixture of origin story plus another story that starts midstream. There's two timelines. There's the Depression era timeline, and there's kind of a now timeline. And the now timeline definitely has a lot of backstory that I haven't read the comics, but I've read the summary of how the comics all work together. And a bunch of stuff that they talk about in the plot of this one, they went ahead and did a prequel series after the events of this series to fill in all that shit. Okay. So it's important enough that they went ahead and spelled out what all that stuff was. But yeah, all this story takes place kind of midstream, where there's one generation of heroes that has been around a very long time, and they are trying to, allegedly trying to hand off the mantle to a younger generation of superheroes, but no one seems to be up to the impossible standard set by this universe's Superman, otherwise known as the Utopian.
Yeah, played by Josh, how do you say his last name? Dehamina?
I looked this up just before we got online, and I saw people say Dumel.
Dumel, yes. Okay, that makes sense. I hadn't heard it pronounced in a while, but I like him. I've kind of grown up with him, and like he was in that Vegas show, like when I was in high school, on I think NBC with James Caan, right? James Caan and some other ones, and then Transformers movies and all that. So I liked seeing him in this lead. I think he's actually pretty good in it. Except I have issues with maybe the wigs and things, but. That's nothing to do, I guess, with them.
Right. Exactly. There are a lot of characters. If you are looking for an intimate family story, which this could be, you might be overwhelmed with both the dual settings and then the ton of characters that they throw at you. There's the Samson family, which features Sheldon as the Utopian, played by Josh Duhamel, and his wife, Grace, the superhero Lady Liberty, played by Leslie Bibb. And then there are two kids. What did you think of the kids?
I liked Brandon, who is the Paragon and is kind of really wanting to be the like get the recognition from his father and trying to please him. And then the rebel one is Chloe, who I guess she doesn't really have an alter ego. I don't know what her alter ego was, but she was playing that rebellious, very like, I guess, you know, because she had been forced into this superhero lifestyle that she doesn't necessarily want or can't achieve the ideal that Sheldon wants for them, right? Like their dad. Yeah. So she goes down like drinking and partying and not really wanting the responsibility, which I don't know, maybe I'm not tired of seeing superhero stories, but maybe some of these storylines, maybe I am getting a little tired of like that rebellious thing. I was just was like, okay. And then I didn't really get a sense of why, besides like, I guess it is a big reason, like the dad is very overpowering and like has told you to do be one thing, not let you be yourself. But I'm not sure I liked her story necessarily. I liked Brandon's. I think he, you know, he's just trying to be take over and have his own little journey. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about the kids. They weren't my favorite, to be honest.
Oh, that's really funny that you say that, Kat, because I actually felt like the opposite way. I put standout characters for me during this season. I had Chloe on one of my standout lists. I really liked how the actress Elena Kamporis, I think, I'm hoping I say that correctly, and I apologize if I don't, but I really loved her character, and I loved the way that she portrayed her character. And I think the reason that I didn't particularly care about Brandon's character has everything to do with the level of cheese that is just like infused, but I mean, which you expect out of a superhero kind of story. But I felt like Chloe's character was that actress's portrayal of the character was one of the first characters in the season that didn't have that cheese. And that was a breath of fresh air for me.
I think we'll cover more specific examples of their behavior in our second half spoiler filled part of the review. For now, I'll add that I was underwhelmed by the kids.
Yeah, I would still agree with that for sure.
I felt like I had seen elements of their stories elsewhere. Even though I haven't seen this kind of multi-generational take on superheroism in movie or TV form yet, that's what drew me to this, in fact, was the idea of aging superheroes and what happens when there are superhero families outside of the, say, the Incredibles or something, which is a well-done take, but yeah. it's what it is. It's an animated thing that's meant to be just that thing. Whereas this is what I think you guys were alluding to earlier, where unlike, say, a Marvel or the DC movies, which are highly, like the DC movies are highly stylistic, so that's obviously not meant to mirror our world. And the Marvel movies, similarly. But The Boys, on the other hand, that is a little bit more how superheroes might act and exist. And this skews more toward that. Mm-hmm. So all of that drew me in to this. And so when I saw the kids, like it is no spoiler to mention that Paragon is trying to be his namesake. He's trying to live up to this ideal, which a paragon is, this idealized person. And according to his father's standards, he just never makes it. That's like in the first couple seconds of the episode. So that's no spoiler. Then the Chloe story, man, I'll put a cork in it for now. Cause I have thoughts and feelings on Chloe that I want to get into more depth in later. There are also other members of the family. There's Uncle Walter, who is also a superhero. His code name is Brainwave. And we shouldn't spill too many beans on Uncle Walter. His powers are, it's like everybody has like the base, like some element of super strength, some element of flight, and some like speed, and you know, it's just sort of like a base level bunch of superheroics, and then they get like a unique power on top of that.
Yeah.
So like the Utopian has like laser eyes. Lady Liberty, I couldn't figure out her special power. But Brainwave, his is kind of an extremely powerful psychic ability. Like a Professor X level.
Yeah. I was also thinking, well, it wasn't Magneto, but I was just, yeah, more Professor X.
Yeah. There are other characters that we meet in various timelines. I particularly liked George.
Yes.
Did you guys recognize George, the actor?
Yes, Matt Lanter. I really like him. I've watched him in a few teen shows years ago, and then the most recent one was Timeless, I think, from NBC. I feel like he's always in shows that don't necessarily go on a long time or not as big. So I really like that he was in this one because I was like, oh, maybe he's... I mean, he's been in the lead before. That's normally his thing. So I was like, oh... maybe he'll be a big part of this, which, you know, we do find out later, I guess. I don't know. Leave it open. But yeah, I really liked seeing him. And also, Walter, Ben Daniels is the actor. He comes out in The Crown, one of the seasons. So I also like seeing him. And I think he was also in House of Cards, if I'm not mistaken. So
he's sort of got a Netflix Rolodex.
Yeah. So like there was a really good, you know, like those three I think were really good. And Leslie Bibb I've seen it over the years as well in a few things. But those three guys I think were pretty strong.
I know Matt Lanter as Anakin Skywalker from the Clone Wars series. He was the voice actor. And occasionally, if you've seen enough of the show, you could recognize Anakin in him. But it is not the same voice. It is actually voice acting. What else we got in there? We got a kind of a roguish character named Hutch, who is, I think it's okay to say that it is George's son. And that character has kind of an alternate take. He's kind of our point of view into seeing what it's like to be on the outside looking into the superhero world, but like just outside that line. Because he's family, kind of.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's dealing with kind of being ostracized, right, from the group, or them not fully trusting him in a way because of his dad, I guess.
Yeah. There's a constant reference to George and some kind of betrayal. That is something we can't spoil because we don't know what happened. They don't say.
Yeah, he's a very curious character. There's enough information throughout, enough kind of like holes and stuff that belong to him that keeps me really intrigued. So I'm really looking forward to see how this character plays out.
Of the people in that age group, because there were Brandon and Chloe, like you just said, but there's a series of other heroes that get a little bit of screen time that make sort of the younger rank of the Union. But out of all of them, I think Hutch had the most compelling and charismatic performance and character out of the bunch. I was very interested to see where he was going, what he was doing, why he was doing it. How did you guys feel about his portrayal?
I relate to him I don't relate to him in like, I don't do the activities that he does and whatnot, but I'm just, I guess... like just kind of like I still kind of see myself as like really young and in that kind of generational piece, you know, like I don't think my age group specifically is like portrayed amongst the generations of what we're showing. Right. So if I'm going to pick like the oldies and the newbies, like I feel like I'm hanging out in the newbies. Okay. So flatter me for a second. But, you know, so I'm just so curious. He's obviously brilliant. You learn that right away, right off the bat. He's got a lot to him. And I'm just so curious. He inspires curiosity in me. And I just really want to know, like, what is going on with him?
Yeah, he was one of the more interesting characters, I think. When he was on screen and, you know, we do learn more about his history, I was like, yes, I want to know more about that. And then like it coincided with, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler that, you know, it's going through the two timelines in every episode and we learn more and more as it goes on about how, you know, they got their powers. So I really like that. I want to know more about the dynamic between, you know, his dad and what happened and when did he leave him exactly? And like, obviously the history behind, whatever betrayal, you know, happened, which we do get a little bit of, but, I have to say that, I don't know about you guys. I was a little bit more distracted than I like to be watching this show. I don't know if that's because of the show, and like, not a lot happens really, like until like later in the episodes. And I was kind of bummed that I wasn't as excited about it as it went on. And so, I mean, this storyline was the more exciting one. So I started, you know, I would pay attention to those, but like, I don't know. It was just overall, it really had to pay attention. I don't know if that was just me, but it felt like there was a lot of filler within these, and it didn't get going till later on when I was like, oh, now it feels like the series is actually starting, like maybe in the 6th, 7th episode. And then it was, you know, there's only 8 episodes. So I was like, this is kind of like, are they just leaning into season 2 already? You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Without going into details, I'll say that I agree with that and that I felt very much the same in that the first episode, aside from establishing a bunch of stuff, it's also one of the most action-packed. And then the last episode explains a bunch of stuff and is also somewhat action-packed. And then those middle 6, you're right. It's like a kind of, you know what a bathtub curve is?
No, I need you to explain this to me.
The bathtub curve explains certain kinds of things, like, I don't know, failure rates or something like that, where things, say like an electronic that you buy, right, is more likely to fail at the very beginning of its life or at the very end of its life, but not just somewhere midstream. So if a thing is meant to last like 7 years or whatever, then unless it's going to, like, just, it's a lemon and it dies right away, then it's going to last 7 years and then die. And that can be represented by this thing called a bathtub curve. Okay. High on one hand, low, and gotcha. Then high again.
I'm following you.
So in this case, the action and sort of the narrative pace, I think, could be described with something like that, where episodes for me, 2 through 7, were such a slower pace that I did need to come back and make sure I hadn't missed something because of sleeping reasons.
I think that's totally fair. I don't think that I got the same experience as both of you are describing, but I absolutely agree. Like, I can totally see that perspective for sure. I think to me, it was more like a very late start. Like, I almost kind of didn't want to continue past episode 2 for cheesy reasons. And and then afterwards, we started to kind of get sprinkled with some really cool eye candy of this different dynamic that's opposite of cheesy, a little bit more mature rated. Then we get the visual candy from all of the powers. And I feel like I was satisfied kind of seeing that for the rest of the season. And it was okay. But there were some things that I'm sure we can talk about in part 2 of this conversation about how I perceived the journey, because I felt like the journey, the story of how it was told was just very inconsistent. And mm-hmm. that in itself was distracting to me too. So part 2, yeah. Guys.
I think the tone of the show like was a little bit confusing for me. And I watch a lot of different genres. And we've watched, you know, genres, and I felt like it didn't know what it wanted to be, even though this is a superhero show. I felt like there was a lot of different things. Like, it felt like there was a bit of, like, supernatural or, I don't know, like, elements that it just felt different all the time. Like, there wasn't one consistent thing. And so I think that also was taking me out watching the series. So I was a little bit disappointed with that, is like, you know, with The Boys, it's like, yes, it is what it is. And it has its same consistent style and tone and all that. Snowpiercer that we did, you know, one consistent tone and all that kind of thing. But this one just felt like a lot of little, like, different things. Like, if you had come in the middle, I don't know if you could know that it was like a comic book superhero-y type thing. I don't know if I'm the only one that felt that way, but
well, I definitely felt this work felt like it leaned a lot on other works, and it
yes
reminded me of a lot of different things, but not in such a way that it took those ideas and stood above them. It just more like, I'll take a little from here, a little from there.
Yes, I totally felt that way.
Yeah,
and I'm ready to talk about that.
yeah, because it made it feel like, I think, and I like we said, I think I'll be mentioning The Boys a lot, but you think about those things that maybe it was influenced by, and you're like, I'd rather be watching that other thing. And that's never good to be, that's never a good spot to be in
right.
when you feel that way. Yeah. Because also there's sometimes where it happens where you're like, man, this is like this, but this is awesome. And it's its own unique spin. And that I didn't get that feeling with this show.
just kind of thinking about what you said, Paul, like, did I snooze through something? Because it was, you're right, it was a lot of darkness, and it was a lot of like that same serious kinds of music throughout the whole thing. There was like no joy and laughter at all throughout of it. And so I found myself also kind of getting distracted in that way on some parts, and some parts it's like, come on, people, lighten up.
Well, that's a non-spoilery criticism that could be fair that we should discuss is one measure of a piece of work's success, and it's not the only one, but it's one that people will definitely hold against a movie or TV show, is how seriously does it take itself, and does the work on screen merit that, right?
Yes.
And when something is presented in a way that is deadly serious, but then what you see doesn't fit tonally, whether it's visually or just the way it's edited or the line delivery or just the combination of all that stuff, it doesn't add up to as serious as like the script wants you to think it is, then you feel it. It's a dissonance in your soul.
Yes, for sure.
I'm afraid we hit that with this, in that it wanted to be very serious, and through a certain number of factors, I don't think it meets it.
It felt like it should have been grittier given that seriousness, but you don't get that, like, from, you know, what, like, there was some, I guess it's not a spoilery type thing, but there was more of the action in the beginning, and I was like, okay, that's set. I was like, I was expecting that, and then it's stopped doing that, and then it just started doing a lot of more of the drama, which is fine, but it just didn't make any sense in that way. And you're right, I think that's what I was also like, especially Josh Duhamel was really like, he tried his best and the way he was delivering some of those lines that were kind of like, you know, those big speeches or inspirational things with like his family, it just, they fell flat for me, because it was like, it didn't match with like we were going, what was going on with this other storylines, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or what you're talking about mm-hmm. being too serious, but like no one else is being serious.
No, I totally get what you're saying. And I felt this way like throughout the whole thing. One of my biggest notes here was I was kind of accepting of a lot of the cheesy early on, and then it pivoted all of a sudden to some like mature rated kind of stuff, like a very different tone. And I was having a lot of trouble like taking that transition seriously. And it's like, okay, this, the mature part that we're at now, like seems super cool. Like, why do we even bother with some of this cheesy stuff? And I was having a hard time doing that transition when I would see it. And so I think that is a big distraction.
Right. One of those things for me was the visual quality of it. Like, mm-hmm. like the sets and things, those were all fine. I didn't like the costumes, but if you look at the comic work, the suits, I think, match the comics exactly or very close. So, I mean, if you're a comic purist, that might scratch that itch. But I think there's a reason why, in a lot of cases, those things get translated. Like, say, why the Scarlet Witch's suit never looked exactly like her comic book suit, or, you know, that sort of stuff. Because it just doesn't fit well on screen. So, like, the costumes. But for me, I need my comic book action. It needs to feel grounded in mm-hmm. The way that a super fight should play out in my mind, right? And those things should include things like gravity and velocity. And so when a superhero starts taking off and flying to punch somebody in the face, I expect it to look faster than if I was running at them. A lot of those kinds of moments in this didn't have that dynamic sort of like, holy shit, kind of stuff that you want to see when you're watching superpowered people do battle. And I guess the short way of saying that, they did not sell the fight scenes any better than, I don't know, professional wrestling.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was, I think, something where it just felt like I'm not watching a superhero show anymore. It felt like, meh, you know. And also, it's a bit confusing because, to be honest, like, I didn't know everyone's power because it was kind of willy-nilly. I don't know. Like, it was just so, like, not that they need to explain it and be like, we have, you know, laser eyes, and like, I don't need that kind of explanation. But like, it just felt like, I don't know what role. I think you also have to, like you said, it needs to be grounded. And I also want to know like the world building of like these powers and stuff, because then it keeps you like, oh, this is what can happen in this universe, as opposed to the Marvel or the DCEU and all the other kind of stuff, right? Like, I don't know, there's some way to build that. And I feel like they didn't build, like, I don't know what the Millerverse is, you know, if that's, like you mentioned, the comics. And so I just felt like I could see elements of all those other universes, but I was like, what is exactly the parameters of this universe? And they didn't build that in the action scenes or like whatever their powers are and like all that kind of stuff. So I was just like, I don't know whether I should be like in awe of this because it's different. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of all over the place. So that, I think, also got me out of it, of like really enjoying it, because I just didn't know that parameter, I guess, for the world, the world building.
What did you think of the visuals, Inez?
I really, like, from the historical flashbacks that we see, I loved the setting and like all of those kinds of details, the costumes, the makeup, all of the interior design, exterior design. I thought that was super cool. I really felt like I was like straight up there in the Depression era. But I was not as excited when we would have to flash forward and see with present day timeline. The cheesy costumes doesn't match like the modern environment that I live in or that I kind of expect. Maybe I'm being biased because I am fresh off of the Marvel track. I just finished watching WandaVision, and I've started the other series with the other two, I can't remember, with Bucky.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Oh,
yeah. So I think like I might have some biases like because of that. So I think my focus at that point, every time we came to present day, the environmental design, exterior costumes, like, was just gone. Like the creativity, all of like magic was just kind of gone, and really only had left was the powers and the effects of the powers. And I did enjoy seeing that. I didn't feel like I didn't get that, but I think I was more like, at the very least, like, this is what you should be giving me if you're going to make me sit through like this random kind of, you know, timeline. But I enjoyed everything they did on the historical settings.
Oh, I did too. That was my favorite part, actually. And I think as the series went on, I was like, I wish they would have just done the the origin story and not the future part, and left that for like season two, to be honest.
I mean, I'm not criticizing exactly like, say, Josh Duhamel or anything in terms of like his ability to portray action or anything like that. I like when I see a superhero that they kind of match their character. If you don't know, Josh is 6'4". He's a big man and he fits that frame, broad shouldered and all that stuff. So he definitely fits. It's just like, I think some of these other choices that were made for him is what I'm going up against.
I agree, yeah. Paul. Because I did like the actors, and I felt like I kept referring to the script. I was like, why would they write it like that? Why would they say that? Like, that's not... that's so cheesy. Like, why would you say that? And then later on, write other scenes that like don't even match the genre anymore. So I'm like, so are we cheesy or are we not cheesy? Yeah. You know, I felt like I was on this journey, and I agree with you. It's not something that it was the actor's fault. I think they all did a great job and with the best they can. But I just felt like I was stuck with cheesy in the beginning. And then I got some episodes of like really cool visual display of their powers. So that was like kind of what brought me back. And then I was totally vibing with this like Lost kind of feeling, referring to the show Lost, you know, where they're like, you know, that whole like journey of the supernatural island or whatever, like all of that kind of tone. So I was enjoying the story from like that kind of hook. And then I felt like it finished like at like, I don't know, Inception.
Well, all that being said, I would like to talk more specifically with you guys. So let's render our love it or leave it. In this one, I wouldn't feel compelled to just pick one or the other. If you feel somewhere in between, then tell me that and give me your reasons. Why don't we start with Inez?
Okay, thank you so much for giving me the option, because it was stressing me out that the one I wanted to pick was not it was not love it or leave it. I think that I don't love the show, But by the end of the season one, I feel like I'm willing to watch season two. I'm willing to kind of just continue the story just for like an entertainment sake, but I don't necessarily love it. And I, you know, if something else does come along that like really pulls me in, I think that this one I would kind of prioritize like later on into my queue.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't love it, but I wouldn't say not to watch it. I do think it needs some work. And so if they're going all in, and I'm guessing if they bought this, they're probably going to do a season two unless the numbers are abysmal or something. And I feel like that could be a good thing because I think maybe, who knows what they gave. This was like 3 years ago when they greenlit it. So maybe also the budget issue, you know, maybe there was like budget stuff. So maybe that's why the costumes weren't the best and like the wigs and all that kind of stuff. And when you're, unfortunately, they have, I don't mean to do it, but we just have that bias of having all the other superhero entities out, like the content. So there's nothing we can do but compare them sometimes. And so like seeing the quality of the other shows, you know, I think is kind of, it goes against this show in a way, like, you know, and also at the basic minimum, if you can't do like a wig right and it looks like off and I can see it, like, no, like, you know what I mean? So I just feel like with those things, it took me out, but I don't hate it. And yeah, at the very end, like, I want to know more about the dynamic between the oldies, I guess, and what happened. And I hope they can explore more of that in season two. Yeah, I really like the island. It felt like, I don't know, King Kong-ish a little bit, like Skull Island-ish. And I was like, ooh, yes, go more. Like, that's why I was saying, like, at the very end, I was just like, okay, let's just go for that. But yeah, so very mixed. I think that's where a lot of people are going to fall, I think. I don't hate it. I don't love it. But I'm willing to also give it a go for season two and see if they can improve on some of those things.
This is why I asked you guys, because we have very similar outlooks on this kind of thing. I also would give, at best, a like it. and it's just because I'm over the 50% mark. Like, there was more that I liked, but only because at the end, there was that thing that made me want to know how this was going to turn out. But it just took a while to build to that point. Yeah, so I have to agree with all of the reasons you guys listed without needing to elaborate, because you guys said it so well. It's just there's something here, but we've seen elements of it elsewhere. And some of those comparisons, like you said, Kat, are way too obvious. They're not even like cleverly hidden. They're just right there. And I'll mention one just as soon as we flip over to the spoiler side. So yeah, mine's about a like it. I would be surprised if this ranks, you know, higher than like a 6.5 or 6.7 on IMDb by the time everyone's done voting on it. Just my guess. You know, there's it's a change up from the Marvel universe, but like you've mentioned in your Selena coverage, Kat, when you see Netflix attached to something, you know that they have enough money to make things like The Crown. And then you see what they make with other properties and you're like, but you have Crown money.
Yes. Or even like in the early days, Daredevil and Jessica Jones and, you know, those were really good. So it kind of kickstarted Netflix in like, oh, they're making really good television that is not having to adhere to the standards of like, you know, like ABC, like network television. So it was there in the beginning, and it just seems like it's kind of, sometimes it's very hit or miss now. And so I don't know what happens there.
Yeah. So that's our take is that we're generally lukewarm. We'll come back. But if there's something that premieres this same week, as volume two, which is almost a certainty, we may watch that other thing first, is what it boils down to. So if you are not interested in listening to us talk about spoilery topics, then you should stop the podcast now. Otherwise, we're going to start spilling our guts about specific things that happened in this show. My first thing is that the setup for the Utopian seemed lifted right out of the Green Arrow. Did you guys ever watch Arrow?
I started
the series on CW.
Yes,
I started, but I didn't get past the first season.
You might remember that Oliver Queen's father, who is a businessman, kills himself, and then later Oliver Queen figures out that his father was kind of a shitbag, and he felt like he needed to right the wrongs of his father. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any examples of things that you felt were borrowed with very little makeup applied?
Yeah. I mean, there was like just obvious ones like the Samsons live on a farm, and it just, I kept thinking Smallville, you know, like obviously Superman kind of thing. And I was like, but I'd rather be watching Smallville, like, you know, that, in that way. And say Jessica Jones, I think Malcolm's character, the same hairstyle also was like with Hutch, like the kid, like they had the same thing. And I was like, are you serious? Like, are you doing the same? Like, cause Malcolm was badass in Jessica Jones. And it just felt like that was also like kind of the same character. I mean, not the same character cause he didn't have powers, but like just the same vibe and look of that. And so I was just like, but I liked Malcolm's character in Jessica Jones better, you know? So that was something. And then obviously I had a lot of the Boys vibes, and I was like, I'd rather be watching the Boys. So I don't know. It just was a lot of comparisons that did not go in their favor.
Yeah, I more was, like I mentioned earlier, it was about like the plot, like the way that they told the story. Those all kind of like seemed borrowed because it just felt so inconsistent. And it felt like it was like kind of, we're going to try this way on this one and then switch it up and try this way, this one, and we'll learn and see what sticks and maybe do better in season two. It's my guess. I'm hoping that there's some kind of continuous improvement process going on here. You know, maybe that's why, but that was the biggest kind of thing that got to me, is I just kind of kept finding myself as tying it to a different story style. I'm not as well versed in the superhero worlds as you both are, so that's where I was leaning on. Yeah.
Another element that it reminded me of was Watchmen. Where the idea of like you're picking up on a story about people that had much better days before. You know, to some extent, I mean, like the comic / you know, Zack Snyder movie. Yeah. But also the HBO show, because that one picks up after a series of events that you have to kind of go back and learn, you know, how we got here. Whereas this doesn't do you that favor. You never find out exactly. We got, you know, they tell us how we got to 1930, but there's kind of an intervening several years there where we don't know what happened. And that's what bothered me most about this, was it became pretty obvious by about episode 4 or 5 that we weren't gonna. This whole bloody series, this whole season anyway, was meant to serve up the second thing, which feels like the actual show.
That's how I felt too. It was just felt like, like I said, I think it was like 7 and 8 where I was like, I wish it had started there. And like, I honestly, because I, like I said, I was going in and out, which I don't like doing. You know, I watch a lot of the shows, and when I'm in a show, I'm like, you know, I'm really obsessed and like, I want to know more about it. And when the season ends, I'm really sad because I'm like, oh, I want season 2 right now. And I did not feel this way, like going from episode to episode. I was like, kind of like, oh, I have to watch it because I'm doing this podcast. You know, I didn't have that excitement, you know? And I think that also says a lot. Yeah. I just wish they would have started more. I just felt like was it like 3 to 5 or 6? Like, I think you said it, 3 to 7 or something. It was a lot of filler. Like, we are following Sheldon trying to, you know, he's kind of having the visions with his dad. And I just kept thinking like, well, what is the, like, why did they choose them? And it just felt like it was meandering a little bit, you know, like there was no compelling reason. Like, Watchmen did a really good job of like going back in the series, on HBO, and showing little tidbits and like tying it into the future, in the present really well. And this one was just kind of like, I don't know, it didn't do much, you know, like I kind of didn't pay that much attention in some of these episodes. And I don't think I missed much is my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like we find out that his motivation, and like I said earlier, was to kind of right the wrongs of his dad. And that kind of created the idea of the code. But Sheldon is pretty one note, though. He is like, follow the code. Why? Well, because it's the code, you know? And I never was given more of a satisfactory glimpse into more of Sheldon then just follow the goddamn code, you know?
Right. Because they said it right, like, on the very last episode or maybe second to last episode when they are literally having, like, their first superhero meeting about it. Like, he's just like, this is the code. And I'm still thinking, like, who the fuck said that that's the code? Like, where the fuck did you get this from? And I was waiting for that too. Like, where the fuck did this code come from? Is it like embedded in the power DNA that they like received during the blast or what? What, like, what are you giving me? Like, I'm right there with you. That was very anticlimactic to me.
He seemed to just make up the code as he went along. Cause it's like, I rewatched the pilot this morning. And remember, he says the code to the kids when they're fighting with the boy, and Chloe uses that sonic scream that she never uses again.
That's true.
And she says something like service and something and mercy, and that's the code. But then it's like, well, also the code is don't kill anybody, and oh yeah, also the code is we don't rule. And
right. I was right there with you trying to figure out how did this code generate, who's to set it, like if this island is designated them worthy and then gave them this power, but like they are the ones who came up with the code. Like, it made no sense to me, like, without giving me more kind of context. And I was waiting for that the whole time about this. What's the significance behind this code that we're not understanding? And I still was just like lost. I like, did he just make this shit up? Like, in this conversation that I'm watching, is this the origin of the code? Because this fucking is stupid. No wonder nobody wants to follow it anymore.
The Black Star escape at the end, was he just doing that to test the code? That seemed to be what he was, what was his end game there? Once he was either killed or killed Paragon, was he, yeah, see the code, right? Like, what was the plan there, other than just like this narrative tool to show whether or not the Utopian really was going to stick to the code or not, which it didn't actually come to pass. I don't know. I did not jive with the code part. What were you going to say, Kat?
I guess from the boys' aspect, like, we saw how they interacted with the world, you know, like how they took them in. And in this one, it seemed very odd, like having those moments, like no, like they would just show up at the police thing. They would go do their thing. And I don't know, there was none of that dynamic. I guess it was just sort of like accepting, and we never got that background either. And then I realized we were never going to get it as well. And I was like, not that it was a big thing, but it also felt kind of like, I was like, okay, like, you know, yeah, because given that, like, in other shows and other things, it's a big deal with, like, everyday citizens and, like, hey, should we have superheroes in this? And there was none of that dynamic here. It was like, oh, did the world just accept these superhuman beings and that was it? Like, and then they let them follow their own code. Because, like, it seemed like everyone was okay with others, like, with them if they had to kill people. Like, you know, like, no one seemed to be, like,
it was a union.
It was just like Sheldon was the one that was like, don't kill anyone, and I'm sure like the people were like, do what you need to do, like, so it never, there was never explanation on like how the world was interpreting the beings when they showed up, and that, I found that like lacking, because it kind of, just in terms of world building, I think that should have been there in some way.
Well, and then additionally to that, they go through this somewhat arduous trial to gain the powers, kind of. I mean, in the trailer, they make it sound like, you know, they had to face down 1,000 Zulu warriors or something. But no, they just needed to cross this weird island that turned into a desert and you know, put their hands in the right place. And then they got their powers. And that seemed like, okay, well, then they have powers. But then you fast forward the timeline to now, and then just randos have powers.
I made a note of this, you know, is like, how did they transition to like public integration? Like, you know, did they really like reproduce all of those people that now have powers? And, you know, my theory around that might be that the people who were on the ship, you know, they appeared to have also received the powers, and maybe that's part of the purpose, right? Like, you know, that Sheldon was so adamant that it had to be this specific captain, and then, you know, and maybe it's because that Vision established that these people on the boat are worthy of also getting the powers accidentally when I make you six do all of the work.
So like some power juice like spilled over onto the boat.
Yeah, because you can see like on the skin, it has like the shapes, those like loopy, swirly kind of shapes on their skin as the power's like hitting on them. So I'm assuming this must be like it's the offspring of like this kind of like group. But I was waiting for like the how they transition. How do you go from, you just see them like hiding and be showing up in the news, but you don't ever actually see how they become normalized. And I felt like all of the scenes where they were normalized were just so fucking cheesy that I like wanted to vomit. And and those were in like the first two episodes. Like it was very difficult for me to get past. Like I had no motivation to try episode 3. and a lot of that was because of the tone. I guess I don't do well with the tone. I like funny things. I like things that have humor, things that have more than just one serious kind of tone. So that's my bias and preference there, especially coming off of the Marvel track. And so like I was struggling staying awake and staying like involved because it was so cheesy. And I just felt like there's some important holes here that I would have liked answered for me to further care. Like at that battle scene, Paul, that you're referring to at the end, I didn't even give a shit that Brandon like might hate his dad now. Like I don't even fucking care because this whole fucking scene makes no sense to me. Just like what you were saying, like why did this code have to be tested? Like what is this grand plan of all of that? And I was just like, well, I don't even care. Like but it felt like I was supposed to. It felt like there's this whole like emotional experience that I'm supposed to empathize or sympathize for like Brandon feeling sad or whatever, but I don't even like Brandon. So like, okay, fuck off. Like, I don't care. And so, you know, I just kind of hop over to like the ones that did entertain me. Maybe that's why I like Chloe so much, because she was just going to give me some random stuff. And she would say the stuff that was like making my stomach turn, you know, every time I had to hear a nickname. And I love Chloe's character for being like, what's like, is that the stupid nickname that you came up with? Like she said it right after I was like cringing over it. So I'm like, fuck yeah, Chloe, you tell him.
I think one of the things that bugs me about Paragon was established like in the first few minutes of the show. You know, I'm watching it and Caroline is kind of watching this and that, you know, coming in and out of the room and she's asking about different things on screen. And there's the scene at dinner where Brandon is sitting on top of the house and Walter shows up. And I hadn't seen or read anything. And I said, oh, this is the Lion King.
Oh, oh my God. You're right.
It looked like Scar and Simba, you know.
Yes.
And it took a while to play out, but I think I was right.
Yes, you fucking were.
So, and the thing is, Brandon's not even, he's not even following that arc like Simba. My problem with a lot of these characters, and we've established this, that the show feels like it took a while to get going, but I think that's because so did the characters. Paragon wasn't interesting until that moment at the fight where you, like you identified, he might actually hate his dad now. Lady Liberty, she wasn't interesting at all, except for the moment when she might have decided to differ on her opinion of updating the code. But that took forever to get to. Mm-hmm. And so many of the other characters played such a little part. That's maybe why George seemed to stand out so much, was that his his portrayal was more dynamic. He had a lot of things to say and do. He had this change of heart about being a superhero that was implied but not shown. So maybe that was why you kept an eye on him. You know? Incidentally, I have a theory on Sheldon's hair.
Oh, yeah, I hated that hair.
Here's my theory. I read a series of books, novels, called The X-Heroes. It is a superhero-zombie mashup. There's a character in there who's kind of a Superman sort of template, sort of like the Utopian. And it's a big deal to give him a haircut because his hair is just as strong as the rest of him. So it's not just a trivial thing to give him a haircut. It's like they have to be prepared to like go through bolt cutters in order just to give him a trim. And I imagine that's why he wouldn't cut his hair, is because it's such a big deal that you would just spread it out over however long, because who cares anyway? That's my guess. That's my headcanon on justifying why Uncle Walter gets to look so cool and kempt as an old man, and Sheldon looks like a homeless person.
My theory about his hair was because they kept, you know, they named this character Samson, so I just kept thinking about the biblical story Samson, you know, where he has his superhuman strength and one of the rules is that he can't cut his hair or he loses all of his strength. So I'm with you there.
You're probably closer to the truth, and everyone except for Chloe has long hair, longish hair. But I, you know, if I was going to rate power, like on the scale, we've been told that Utopian is supposed to be max out. Like there's no one stronger than him. But from what we saw of Chloe, I bet she's stronger than Brandon, you know, in terms of just kick-ass ability. And that's maybe why that's the big disappointment to Dad, is that he has to settle for Brandon.
Yeah. Settle for Brandon. That's so sad. Oh my God, sorry. I don't know why that made me laugh. Maybe because I don't like Brandon. Okay, so I got that out of the way.
I'm not mad about him having long hair. I'm mad at the execution of the long hair where you can see the hair. You know, just there's been a lot of good quality shows, luckily, that we've had in our orbit. And so, unfortunately, I have to compare it. My mind just goes and compares it to that. I'm like, ooh, something's off here. And I think that's when you realize, like, oh, there are the levels of, like, really good costuming and hairstyling and all that. And, yeah, it just, from the very first episode, I was like, ooh, this is not good. And also with, like, Uncle Walter, like, it felt like I could see, like, his beard was also not groomed well or wasn't stuck on well. Like, it was just bad. And I was like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah, the fit and finish of this show, like I said in the previous section, like the fight scenes just didn't have the movement, the dynamic camera work. The camera moved around. It did. It's just, you know, they start the whole goddamn thing with their Thanos battle, you know?
Yeah.
And thing is, we've already seen the Thanos battle and it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this wasn't that.
Oh, I wonder if they filmed it like a few years ago or when they did, because even then, though, a few years ago, we still had really good high quality content of other superhero shows. So I don't know, but it just felt lackluster in those aspects, but not horrible. You know, like we said before, questionable things in some of these storylines, too. It just, I don't know.
Well, did it feel predictable, though? I mean, having so many basically one-dimensional characters, like, obey the code, support my man, he wants the code. I want to be Dad. I don't want to be Dad. These are... did that basically create kind of like a house of cards where, since it was all so familiar, you basically knew where it was going, and that's why 2 through 6 kind of drug, because it was like, we just have to watch them do this shit that we already know they're kind of going to do.
You know, I was watching this with my husband, and I think it was episode 2, he said, Walter's the bad guy. And I was just like, whatever. Like, we don't know anything. Like, I know this show is so cheesy, but we still don't know anything. Oh man, I gotta take that food out of my mouth, because he was fucking right. And I wasn't mad at you. I was definitely, I had to make the most out of this. Like, I felt like this is how I'm gonna get through it. I'm just gonna have to really, like, embrace the cheese that's here and go for it. And Walt actually was one of my favorite actor portrayals. Ben Daniels did really great in all of those scenes related to him. It was probably one of the best, like, emotional displays. All the other ones, everything felt like way too cheesy. Like, I didn't like Lady Liberty at all. It just, I think I'm still stuck at, I probably would have been fine if it was cheesy, if it was kind of like a younger audience, and I got a vibe that it was totally not an audience, you know, when we cut to the scene where a girl's getting eaten out by her, like, lesbian partner. So I'm like, like just jump from like so like such like a cheesy kinds of lines that are that are really good for like maybe younger audience, but it's obviously a mature rated like scene, because you know then we cop to like a fucking hardcore drug binge and intentional overdose. And that's the kind of struggles that I was having throughout this whole thing. I was like, just give me the hardcore stuff if you're going to give me hardcore. Like, please take out this cheesy part. And then I think at some point, I feel, Kat, that you have been trying to touch on this. And maybe I'm wrong, but let me know.
Okay.
I felt like some information in the first episode, maybe specifically, that they might have gone back and rewritten some of the content maybe to match like modern day stuff. It just felt like when they started spending scenes of the utopian kind of like having casual conversations with people about some of like the issues that we have in the country right now, like police brutality, you know, discrimination, like they were intentional about using very modern day current event lingo. And it felt very out of place. It felt like it was just stuck in there, like it was an afterthought. And I think when somebody here mentioned that this was done like in 2017, is that accurate? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, that's when they were, that's when Netflix bought the property.
Yeah. And then I think they had like a few, well, they had that showrunner exit. So like, I wonder if this is a case of like why it feels so tonally off, because feels like there's like one script section, you know, like maybe the first showrunner had like approved like this first go round, and then the second showrunner came in and was like changed a few things, but didn't, obviously probably for budget reasons, didn't change everything. And so that's why I feel like that might be that reason, because we've had that in like with different TV shows, and like a new showrunner comes in and it feels different, or it feels like kind of weird. And so I do feel like maybe that could have been a possibility, although I don't know how far they were in development when that change happened, if they had written all the scripts and stuff, so who knows. But
right, I mean, I don't even know if they did a change, right? I'm just saying how it felt like to me on the receiving end.
Yeah,
like because it didn't match like anything from like episodes 3 to 8.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Like it, like I think they were trying to tie in the code with modern day stances, and it just felt so disconnected to me. I didn't buy it at all. It felt forced. It felt like an afterthought. I don't know if it was, but that's how I interpreted it. And I think also with, I had trouble with the scenes where they were trying to do the normalizing, the powerfulness, like the powered people. I don't know how what they refer to them here, superheroes. Are they just all superheroes? Is that what they call each other?
You know, I didn't get the in-universe name for supers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they did try to make a point to remind us, like, these are just human beings. Like, there's not, like, a special kind of, like, thought process. It's all human kind of instincts kind of stuff. And they just happen to have these powers and they need to be kind of coached, whatever. So I get what they were trying to do and just trying to normalize it, like, show, like, oh, they're just, like, teenagers. But, you know, like, the whole little micro romantic background from Brandon, you know, like, with that girl, like, you know,
Ruby Red.
Right. We broke up last week. And then the next time we see them, it's like this really cheesy from mom, like, ooh, is this happening again? And he's like, yeah, I guess so. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? Like, why do I care about that? I don't care about that. And so it was just way too cheesy. I'm like, I just already fucking saw your sister almost die of a hardcore drug overdose. And you're over here like little teenager, like love background. And that kind of dynamic in the same era, in the same time frame, is that's what's bothering me.
Let me tell you, I'm looking at an article right now about the departure of the original showrunner. His name was Stephen DeKnight, and Stephen DeKnight wrote and directed the first episode and then departed partway through the production of the fourth one.
Yes. That's why it feels off. So we weren't far off, right?
Yeah. If he did the first one, and the second person whose name is Sang Kim, or maybe Song Kim, I'm not going to confirm that I know how to pronounce that. If they decided to finish things up in a way that required a different line or something like that, then they probably would have gone and done it. Like, for instance, I don't know if you guys have seen The Falcon and the Winter Soldier yet.
I'm early in it.
you're early in it. There is a plot.
Yeah, me too.
There's a plot line that is, there are fingerprints of, but gets dropped. And they do it in a way where you're not supposed to notice, but the internet noticed. And how they kind of tried to get around it was things like replacing ADR, you know, lines that were pretty obviously recorded much later to fill in these missing details that kind of gloss over the missing narrative. And so I bring that up just to show you that that even at a high level, even at the Disney level, they do it too. They go back and recraft. I'll be curious to know what you guys think of the ending of that one. It gets a little heavy-handed with the message, and I'll be curious to see what you guys think.
If we're ready to kind of talk about maybe if we're going to watch season two,
okay,
what are, you know, some of our thoughts of where the plot, some plot lines, like where do you think that they're headed?
Like you said earlier, both of you said actually, the idea of sharing the screen time with a plot line that is set in the past and set in the current time, we have been spoiled by things like Lost and The Watchmen, and to some extent, This Is Us, in skillfully weaving what we see happening in the past with what we see happening now in such a way that it really coheres into one story where both things kind of inform the overall narrative for that episode, you know? It's like one helps the other. Whereas these were just like two distinct narratives, you know, the he goes crazy and they have to go find the powers or the island. And that did not at all really have anything to do with what was happening in the current timeline. So I think one thing that I would like to see is if they bother to try that again, I would like to see those things intermingle in a more meaningful way.
I agree. Honestly, the back and forth storytelling piece is probably what kept me hooked because I think I was also trying to make those connections. And so I agree. If we can kind of see more about like the evolution of how they were able to be a public entity, how does this whole thing like work from a legality standpoint? Like, you know, they were so detailed in the historical stuff, but it feels like the futuristic or current day stuff, there's not a lot of information about how things work, like Kat was mentioning earlier. So I would like to see that. Like I mentioned with Hutch, I really want to know the truth. I really want to know what that backstory is. I want to know how Sky Fox became the world's greatest supervillain.
That's what's going to make me watch the second season. It's almost like I could have probably started with the second season and been okay. What do you want to see in the second volume, Kat?
Along the same lines, I think just because I really do like Matt Lanter as in his character, he plays it very well. He's very charismatic. I think he's a good lead actor for these kind of shows. I think they kind of did him dirty with not having him in the, more in this series because I think him and Josh Duhamel were fun to watch, you know, because they're very, I think they're a little bit different. While they're both leading men and very handsome, they're different in how they play their characters, you know, and it just felt like a missed opportunity to have them in more scenes together. Although I do like Ben Daniels and he's obviously, they were good together as well in that character, but the brother kind of turning bad also is kind of stereotypical, right? Like we've seen that before.
Right. Yeah.
So, and we've seen like the friend who seems like they're bad, but then they actually, it's just because like the story, you know, like it's perceived that way and they're actually not a villain. So I wonder if that's what we're going to get with Sky Fox in season two, when we learn more about his origin story. It just feels like they withheld these really big things that are the more interesting parts so we could keep going to season two.
Yes.
Right. What it feels like.
Yeah.
They don't feel strongly about what they had. And I feel like they left those out to keep us going. And that, to me as an audience member, that makes me mad. It's like, have a really strong season one and I'll go to season two. And I'm going to season two in a way where I'm like, well, I just want to know what happens to these characters that I actually like that you didn't give me anything on. That's not a good way to go in.
Right. I also want to learn about the power rod guy. I don't even know his name. He's the one that they saved, that was overboard that they saved. He was like the final person, the final key to this thing. And he's the one that ended up with that power rod.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but I want to know what happened to him, because he has one of the coolest tools. And like, he actually delivered the only line that made me chuckle and laugh out of all 8 episodes. And it was literally like the one scene where he's like in his uniform and we get to see him with his rod, and they make a lot of rod jokes.
Well, and the worthy, you're not worthy. the Marvel Thor business.
Yes, but I want to know that. I want to play with that rod.
We'll cut that out and send that to Steven as a ringtone.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, like that was kind of like a sad character to me. But, oh, real quickly, I don't know what you guys' favorite scene was, but I did have one scene. The Red Foreman guy, Kurtwood Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I loved his scene. I loved his scene. I felt like maybe it was the first, like, really big acting scene that wasn't, like, so cheesy that it made me sick. But I thought his scene was really cool.
Kurtwood Smith is... If you're as old as me, then you know that he's Clarence Boddicker, the bad guy from RoboCop. And that guy does not fuck around on film.
No. But he was so great in his scene. I was like, well, yeah, if you're going to have one scene, like, he really delivered it a really great. I just was curious. I don't know if there's any going to be any information about it after the season releases, but I was curious if that scene was recorded like in one shot or something. He was just really amazing in it.
That might be some of the backstory that's worth knowing, is how the hell did him and his little family and all that, how do they figure in to the location of the island and all that stuff? Like, is it just happenstance? Because people kind of hate that. When it's part of the reason people don't really like the Rise of Skywalker was there were all those elements of, well, if you just look at this the exact right way, that's the clue, you know. Well, what if you're standing to the left? You just miss it?
No? I do hate that. You're right. I do hate that stuff. But that's why his acting alone is kind of what saved me in this little bit. Because I did. There's still a lot of questions there. I have some theories. I don't know if we have time to kind of go into it. But I was just like, was his whole family like part of the 6 that were supposed to go? And they just like killed each other right at the end. Like, was there island test on this farm? Like, how the fuck are they just all dead on the bottom? Like, I need to know. Like, what is their story besides him just like, you know, having the little swirlies and the coordinates on the wall? Anyway. But you're right, Paul. I did choose to ignore a lot of stuff just for the sake of getting through to the next episode. But I did want to make a note that Mr. Smith's acting in this one, like, I felt like did a big redemptive effort for me.
He brings it.
Totally. He was cool. I love the makeup that they put on him, too.
Well, it helps that he's also actually old now.
Yes. But it was like, it just kind of had like an extra element of like creepy harshness that matches like that depressive era, as well as like living in like a useless farm in the middle of the desert with a broken windmill.
I wonder if looking at season 2 or volume 2, since this one is called volume 1, if since we've seen so many other borrowed elements from other properties that we already have identified, one that I think I'm feeling coming on is going to be the philosophical difference between Professor X and Magneto. This is expressed both in the comic books and in the movies. Are you guys familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes. We should do like we could come up with like a drinking game if we start to see like how many borrowed plot lines can we get out of this season 2.
Right. I basically think that George and Walter will be basically the Magnetos. They will see their powers as putting them above humanity, and that humanity will never see them as equals or capable of living amongst them peaceably, and that they're better off assuming a place of control, because who's going to stop them? And that's, I think, going to happen. And George probably just tried to start that earlier. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like where that's going. I think that would make a strong season two, because especially with those actors, they have the acting chops to make that compelling. And hopefully in this case, the script and the writing just and the story make it worthy of that. Because in season one, it was not the best that we've seen. So I don't know. They had such good casting that like I really do hope they kind of improve season two. Maybe with the one showrunner, if that person does stay on, it'll be more cohesive as well. So I'm hoping if they do get greenlit, they'll like be able just to keep the whole team together. I think there are good elements in the show, like we've all mentioned. So if they just lean on those instead of like maybe some of those other suspect ones, or I think also, I think we've mentioned it, but it did suffer. And I'm not opposed to ensemble pieces of like a lot of different characters, but this one, like they, all those other characters, like I can't even tell you who, what they do and what they are. And it just was, I didn't care. So I also think they need to hone in who they want to focus on, and if there are more of the supporting characters, whether they're going to give them a spotlight or not, because it just felt like they were there. I didn't care about them. And yeah, I think they need to clean that up as well.
All right. Do you have any parting thoughts, Inez?
Yeah, I'm really curious also about Walt's character. I really liked his daughter and like the introduction of that. But, you know, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. I really hope that we can get some of these whole plot holes taken care of.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, Kat. The idea of identifying who this story is about, like with Chloe and Hutch, for instance, the romantic thread of the world's supervillain and the world's most famous supervillain, the world's most famous superhero, kids getting together. That was kind of obvious from the second they met. But they decided to take 7 episodes or something to really solidify it. I understand that you don't want to just leap into these things, because people will say, oh, it's unearned. You went too fast. But at the same time, I guess it's really hard to find that sweet spot, because it felt inevitable right away. And in doing so, like we said with other elements of this, it felt like getting ready for what's going to happen in Volume 2, which is more of their, whatever they're going to do together, their exploits of Chloe finding that balance between who she wants to be and who she was raised to be and who she can justify to herself in terms of her own set of values and that kind of stuff. Whereas Hutch needs to try to find his dad and that mission and all that. That kind of stuff I hope we don't see in Volume 2. No more setup. Let's just go ahead and give us what you want to tell us. Tell us who you want to make the show about. Do that and stick to that. All right, so 90 minutes in, I think we've laid out all the possible ways that they can improve on Volume 2.
Yes, call us for...
Right. So, Kat, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Things Kat Loves, and I also have a podcast at Latinx Lens and at Shuffle the Pod, when I'm not here guesting on Pod Clubhouse.
And Inez is a social media hermit, so you don't need to follow her.
No. I'll just gladly participate in the online conversations, and I do like to read online conversations. But yes, no, I'm not associated. I'll be tagged, though, by Pod Clubhouse, and I really do enjoy being invited to these events. So thank you both for having me again. This is been fun.
It's my pleasure to talk to both of you guys. I wasn't sure how this one was going to go, especially when I felt a little duped by the quality of the trailer versus the quality of the show we got. I felt like the trailer was better than the show for Amen. Me. So I'm looking forward, though, to seeing if they can improve on the second go around.
We're giving them another chance.
Yes. Yeah. So this is Paul with Pod Clubhouse.
This is Kat.
And this is Inez.
And we'll maybe see you next time for Volume 2. We'll see.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.